tend to err on the side of overpaying, because I believe that when you have really great people and really great talent, you should be overpaying. Again, going back to being intentional, right? What is the outcome that this position is designed to create? How can I measure it? And then how can I strategically create bonuses so that people are rewarded when they do that thing? And that's really what it comes down to.
Welcome to the PeopleStack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk, founder of Jen Bunk Ventures and architect of the PeopleStack. My guest for this episode is Russ Ruffino. He is founder of Clients on Demand, which in 2017 was ranked number 186 on Inc. Magazine's 500 fastest growing companies. So welcome, Russ.
Hey, Jen. Great to be here.
It's great to talk with you. I'm so super excited to pick your brain about team building and leadership and all of that stuff. So let's start from the beginning so that folks know who you are and what Clients on Demand is. So tell us a little bit about Clients on Demand in general, but also are there any exciting projects or initiatives that you guys have going on right now?
Sure. So all over the world, basically, and all over the country, there's a lot of people out there that are phenomenal at what they do. There's coaches, consultants, doctors, therapists, chiropractors, healthcare practitioners, and they're amazing at their field. They're amazing at what they do. They just aren't that great at marketing, especially digital marketing. And so Clients on Demand exists to teach cutting-edge marketing strategies to coaches, consultants, thought leaders, and those other people I mentioned, to help them attract the clients that they want at the price that they want anytime they want. And so we teach strategies that are really simple, but our average client does some pretty amazing things like raise their prices dramatically. Many of our clients were charging, say, I don't know, $300 a session, maybe if you're a therapist, and they end up creating online programs that they can sell for $3,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 and using the internet create leverage so that they can deliver their service from anywhere in the world so they're not chained to the office anymore. So by using cutting edge marketing, you can actually do some really, really incredible 21st century things in your business that if you're still stuck in doing things the old way, you know, can seem pretty magical to most people. And so the company's growing, my company's growing really fast. Like you said, Inc. Magazine named us the 186th fastest growing company in America, which is pretty cool. We're on track to do about $20 million this year, which is pretty awesome. We've got 29 employees right now all over the world, and the entire company is virtual. Everybody works from home. So it's kind of a special place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can personally attest to some of that quote unquote magic. So, you know, full disclosure, Russ is my marketing coach. I did Clients on Demand, and it absolutely made a drastic change in my business and in my life, I would say, overall. So, you know, that's how I know Russ. And it's been awesome. We've known each other for about 2 years now. And it's been awesome, you know, to work alongside with you. But like I said, you know, I've seen Clients on Demand kind of grow, even in the last 2 years from, you know, you hiring more folks, bringing more people on. And I thought it was awesome like 2 years ago, but now it's like, wow, it's like this whole next level, especially as you've grown your team. So I'm curious, you know, is there anything that you have, like exciting projects or initiatives that you have going on right now? I know you tend to be hyper-focused and it's like, this is what I do, and we're just going full speed ahead with that. But is there anything that you wanted to share with folks in terms of special projects or initiatives?
Well, we're considering rolling out some new programs to tackle various things, but you know, it's so funny. Like I'm one of those people that kind of has that entrepreneurial ADD, right? Which I think a lot of entrepreneurs have, where we're just the ideal people and we're constantly coming up with big ideas. And so I'll come up with an idea, but one of the things that I love so much about my team is that we always make decisions based on the data. So like, just to give you an example, I'll come to an employee meeting with an idea that I'm really, really excited about and super stoked about. And I'll say, we could do this thing, you know, we could do this live event, or we could do this, or we could do that. And my team's like, okay, cool. That sounds great. And they'll get excited, don't get me wrong. But we always run the numbers. And usually what we find is that we can get to our income goals faster by just getting a little bit better at what we're already doing than we could by stepping out into some giant new venture. So they're always there to kind of slap me in the face and be like, okay, Russ, cool. Glad you're really excited, but let's just take a look and see if this is really going to get us where we want to go.
Yeah, it's great to have a team that can kind of tell you the truth that way. Like, yeah, I get
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
excited.
Yeah.
I don't want to burst your bubble. But so speaking of the team, though, so you said you have 29 employees all over the world, so it's completely remote, which is awesome. So let's talk a little bit about that team building. So what lessons have you learned as you've been going through kind of the hiring and the team building process?
That's a big question, Jen. What
I
lessons?
like those
Okay.
kinds of
I'll
questions.
just rattle off as many as I can. How about that? The first lesson is, and I think this is true with life and this is true with business, is to know what you want and do not settle. So always be outcome driven. And this is something that I have internalized at a very deep level, and also so have my team, where when they show up to a meeting, we know exactly what the outcome is. When we start a new year, we know exactly what our outcomes are. For a new quarter, we know exactly what our outcomes are. So the first thing is to know your outcomes and don't settle. The second thing is to have a strategy that works. And I mean a business strategy that works. So any business really depends on doing three things: attracting new clients into your pipeline, enrolling them into whatever your services are, and then delivering whatever they paid you to deliver in an incredible and very profitable way that, creates amazing outcomes for the clients. And so once you know that, you can begin to make intelligent decisions about who should be doing what. And so one of the biggest lessons I've learned is to make sure that everyone in your company, as best you can, is always working from their area of mastery. And so what I mean by that is that every human being has like things that they're amazing at and things that they love to do. And so if you have something that you're brilliant at, but that you also love to do, that's your area of mastery. And so as the business owner, I'm constantly looking at the team and I look at the business model and I say, okay, well, what are the different pieces that need to be delegated? And then I say, okay, well, who can I find that's an A player that would be brilliant at this thing and that would also love to do it? And then it's like, then my job becomes making sure that they're properly incentivized so that they understand what the benchmark is and they understand what the outcome is and they're really invested in it. And that would probably be the fourth thing, is that there's a huge difference between working in a company where people are working to achieve their income goals and working at a company where people are working to achieve their income goals and making the world a better place at the same time. And so it's critical that everyone on your team has buy-in to the overall mission of the company, and so that they understand the exact direct connection between the work that they're doing every day and making the world a better place and like moving humanity forward. So one of the things we do at my company is that from the sales team to the coaches to everyone working for us, the people who do our Facebook ads, I mean, literally everybody is exposed to all of the incredible results and incredible outcomes that our clients get. And they all feel like they're contributing. And so what you have is this incredible situation where I'm working for my area of mastery all day, every day, which means I'm doing stuff I'm great at and I'm doing stuff I love to do, and I'm making the world a better place at the same time. And it's like, that's like the holy grail. And then especially clients on demand, it's like, oh, and I get to do this from home. Great. I'm in. And that's how you, I think, develop a team that really becomes like an army for you that is just on fire to show up and do their work every day, because they're not just getting money, they're getting fulfillment. And especially today, so few people have real fulfillment in the work that they do. They might like their job, but if it doesn't fulfill you as a human being, it's like, what am I doing?
Exactly. So I get it. It was a big question, but I love the way that you approached it, kind of breaking it up a little bit. But let's get a little bit more into the details here, specifically around hiring. I'm curious how you kind of approach the hiring process. So you had mentioned about making sure that the folks who are on your team work from their area of mastery. They're amazing at that skill, but also they love to do it. So, kind of taking a step back from the hiring process, are there particular strategies or tactics that you use to make sure that you're really finding those A players who are going to thrive in that kind of environment?
Yeah, so first of all, again, it starts with being really crystal clear about what the position is and what the position is for. I think a lot of companies just say, "Well, we need to hire somebody," or "Oh, we're overwhelmed. We better bring someone on." And that's the exact wrong way to do it. You need to have a very clearly defined role for the person And then you can begin to figure out, okay, well, what's it really going to take? And then what would my dream vision be for this? Mm-hmm. And so once you have that identified, then the first place we go, believe it or not, is to the other A players on our team. Because what we find is that A players, especially ones with a lot of work experience, tend to know other A players. Yeah. Well, they'll say, hey, you know, I used to work at this company and this guy was the absolute superstar. Mm-hmm. And if we have a situation like that, we'll try to go out there and poach that person, which usually is easier to do than you think. Because, again, if they're doing work here that's meaningful and maybe at their old work they kind of weren't, it's, mm-hmm. you know, people will tend to transition in a situation like that. And then as far as actually selecting who the best candidates are,
yeah.
I'm a big believer in two personality tests. One of them is called the DISC profile. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it ranks sort of how people work and what their natural preference is in terms of the kind of the way that they relate to other people, essentially. And then the other one I'm a big believer in is the Big Five personality test, mm-hmm. which ranks people based on a few different personality dimensions: conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, neuroticism, and openness to new experiences. Mm-hmm. And based on those two things, we've sort of been able to create almost a personality profile for the different departments within the company, mm-hmm. and what kind of personality would be a great fit and what kind of personality maybe wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And so we don't live and die by that, but those two things are wrong or are right a hell of a lot more often than they're wrong.
Okay, got it. So it sounds like you use the two of them together. You use the DISC together with the Big Five, the Ocean. That's how I remember the Big Five. Hey, big tip out right. there for everybody. It's either Ocean or Canoe. Remember, put a canoe in the ocean and you got it either way. So it sounds like the two of you, you use these two kind of together, which I really like, because they're actually serve very kind of different purposes. The way that I kind of see it is like the DISC is more, it's behavioral, but it's not necessarily like you always act in this particular way. It's like in particular situations, in particular roles, whereas the Big Five is more stable personality traits per se. So can you give us an example of like, okay, here's a particular role, and then how you kind of break down the DISC profile and the Big Five that you would be looking for?
Sure, yeah. So let's take someone who's in a coaching position, okay? Someone who's in a coaching position tends to be a DI. And a DI on the DISC profile, D is directive, which means that they're comfortable taking charge, they're comfortable leading. And then I is essentially, in a nutshell, how important it is to you to create connection with other human beings. Mm-hmm. So if someone's a coach, obviously that's going to be really, really important to them to be able to connect with people and to be able to chart a course, right?
Yep.
And then as far as Big Five goes, we tend to see very, very high extroversion. Most of our coaches are like a 99 in extroversion, which means they're happy, enthusiastic people.
Uh-huh.
They're very low on neuroticism, which means they're very emotionally stable. And they tend to have high assertiveness, which means they're able to tell it like it is.
Yeah.
And they actually tend to have low politeness, which is very interesting because it means that they're not gonna, you know, bend over backwards to sugarcoat the truth. They're gonna tell people the way that it is. And so when we see that profile, we go, okay, wow, we've got somebody that, at least in the way their personality is built, should really thrive in this position.
Got it. Yep. So a coach, DI, high extrovert, low neuroticism. The assertiveness, I guess, might be a combination of some of the traits. Certainly the politeness, I would say, would be maybe low in agreeableness. Mm-hmm. So is the assertiveness, is that something that you measure separately or kind of like a combination?
Well, so in the Big Five test that we use, what they do is they use the Big Five, but then they break each of the Big Five down into two separate personality traits.
Mm-hmm.
So like, so for example, extroversion, I think, breaks down to enthusiasm and something else. Enthusiasm okay. and something else. And so it gives you maybe a little bit more brief, more of a detailed breakdown than just the Big Five. So agreeableness breaks down to politeness and something else. I don't know. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah,
but
me neither.
Those,
okay.
Those yeah. right, those dimensions are all there. And so it actually gives you a pretty solid picture of how someone is likely to perform if you have a good idea of what the role is going to be in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's really where it has to start. You've got to have that clear picture of exactly what you want. But then once you know that, then you can begin to make intelligent decisions about who would be the best fit for that based on what you see in the test.
Yep. And I like what you said about not living and dying by it too, because hey, I know some great coaches who are introverts, right? So I
Oh,
bet
for sure.
sometimes, like people might go there like, well, I actually know a great coach who's kind of, is not a high D actually, is kind of a low D, but might be a higher S or a higher C. So that's where it's like you can't be like, okay, you don't meet this exact profile, therefore we're not even going to consider you, but just kind of using it as a guideline to move forward. And it sounds like that's how you use it.
That's exactly right. Because the truth is, we can be flexible and we can work around the way that someone operates so that we can put safeguards in place to make sure that even if they're, I don't know, maybe somebody that is going to be maybe too agreeable for the position where, we're having a situation where someone needs to take this client and say, look, here's what's going on. And the coach just, it's not natural for them to do that. We can still train them in strategy so that they can do that effectively, even if it's not, the way that they're built. Since they were a kid.
So I'm curious your thoughts on this. It's probably no right or wrong answer to this question. It's going to vary so drastically based on the context. But I'm curious, like leaders. So leaders within clients on demand. So when you think of the folks who have really thrived as leaders within your company, what do they look like in terms of their DISC, in terms of their Big Five?
Well, most of the strong leaders that we have are coaches. And so that personality profile that I gave you, like that's me, that's pretty much everyone on the leadership team, that's our mindset coaches. That's how the leaders are built, using that same profile. Because one of the interesting things that I've found is that sort of the magic bullet that we have because we are a coaching company is the ability to coach. And so I was actually just reading an article about Google, and it was a really interesting article, and what it said was they did this study of their engineering department and their STEM people basically. And what types of people have gotten promoted quickly at Google? And they ranked them according to like eight different attributes that these people had if they were moving up the ladder very quickly. And being a good engineer like wasn't even on the list.
No.
That like, yeah, number one was coaching ability. Number two was like mentoring. It was like, I mean, like the top four were all different ways to say coaching ability. And so you look at it even at a company like Google, right, which is a very technical company, you still are beginning to realize that what really counts in a leadership position is the ability to get great performances out of people. And at the end of the day, that's what a coach's job is. So at Clients on Demand, we have this kind of incredible, stroke of good luck that all of our top people are very, very, very good coaches. And so we're able to take people who are A players and turn them into like A plus plus players. And then when you couple that with the other things I said before, like the fact that people can work from home, the fact that everyone's connected to the mission of the organization, the fact that everybody's compensated very well, I mean, it's a very attractive place to work.
And I love what you just said for multiple reasons. So number one, I love the wink and the nudge to Google, because as everyone knows on this podcast, we talk about the intersection of people, work, and tech. And so some folks may be listening and wondering, why do you have this marketing guy on? And so, but I think what you just explained, Russ, beautifully illustrates how the stuff that works at tech companies, and when we're talking about leadership and coaching and mentoring and all of the stuff that matters, like no matter where you work, building an awesome company, building an awesome team, it comes down to that people stuff, to the coaching ability, to the ability to really lead and all the stuff that we've been talking about. So I love that Google example. I think it's a really great one to really wrap our heads around.
Yeah, and I was shocked because I work at this like touchy-feely coaching company, but the fact that even Google is finding the same thing that we've found for so long, it's like, wow. I mean, it's very significant.
And look, that my academic training is in IO psychology. I have a PhD in that. It's basically expert in the science of organizations. And like this is what we found, right? When you take a look, like when you think about, okay, how do you hire well? Right? Okay, you got to start from a place of crystal clarity. It's like, yes, exactly. This is what I was teaching my students for 10 years, and they're like, well, yeah, but how do you do this? But it's just so, and that's what the research shows, and that's what the science shows. You have to start from what is termed, it's such a sexy term, it's called a job analysis. It sounds so fun, right? But like, that's really what it, we're talking about is like being crystal clear about who do you want to hire, and then from a personality perspective, from their roles and responsibilities perspective. So it's so cool to see the science match up with the practice, right? That we have a company that's number 186 out of 500 in the world according to Inc., and you're doing it that way, and hey, it actually works. It's not just a bunch of academic theorizing that's like, hey, this might
No,
work.
it
So it's really
works. It
cool.
works.
It's really cool to hear that example. But one other thing I want to ask about Russ, to kind of pick your brain about, is I'm thinking of the introverts in the audience, because I am an introvert. So what would you say, so that there's personal stuff associated with this as well. So talking about what it takes to be a leader, what it takes to be a coach, the high D comes up, and so that's about leadership, high dominance, whatever you want to label it, and then certainly the extroversion comes up. So what would you say to someone who's an introvert, who's like, look, I can do this too. How do I make it work?
Well, from my understanding of the Big Five, extroversion and being an extrovert, they're two different things. And I could totally be wrong about this because I'm not a psychologist, right? But my understanding was that essentially neuroticism is a measurement of how much negative emotion a person experiences and sort of how prone they are to feeling negative emotion. And extroversion is not about how gregarious they are or how, how into other people they are. What it is how it's the dimension of positive emotion and sort of how happy they are as a human being. And so I know plenty of introverts that are, they're introverted, they just keep to themselves, but they know what they want, they're focused, they're determined, and they're able to get it. And so that's really all that's required. And you can still also be a high D and also be an introvert because D is directive. It's just in terms of how much you have the vision for steering the ship. In the DISC profile, it's the I that really is how much you need to connect with other people. And so you can be a high D and a relatively low I, which is an introvert. And I think you can still do a phenomenal job as a leader and a phenomenal job running a company. Look at my dad as an example. My dad owns his own business and he's got tremendous loyalty from the people that he works with, and they've been with him for 30 freaking years. Like, there's zero turnover. And he's a total introvert. But he's also a very, very strong leader. And so I think you really can be both.
I think sometimes people might use it as an excuse. They're like, oh, I'm an introvert. It's never going to happen. And so it's like, look, there's no excuse. If you want to make it happen, you can make it happen.
No, in fact, I would argue that an extrovert, in a lot of ways, an extrovert is at a disadvantage because extroverts really want to be liked by other people. You cannot have that as part of your DNA if you're really going to be a good leader. If it is part of your DNA, you got to let it go. If you need that approval, it's like, how can you possibly tell people the thing, the truth, when sometimes the truth isn't something that they really want to hear?
Hi, everyone. We'll get back to the interview in a jiffy. But first, are you a tech manager? In other words, do you lead teams of geeks through long-term complex projects? Do you feel like you're wasting precious time going to useless meetings, dealing with administrative nonsense, and working late nights? Are you working 50 plus hours a week, but don't have the salary to show for it? It doesn't need to be that way. You can build thriving, high-performing teams who produce a measurable positive impact while earning the premium salary you deserve. Oh, and you don't have to work your butt off to get there. If this sounds like the kind of success you're striving for, then go to genbunk.com/webinar to reserve a spot in my free masterclass. I share the four shifts that my tech manager clients made to achieve badass career transformation. That's genbunk.com/webinar. Without further ado, please enjoy the rest of the interview. And so, speaking of the truth, that's a really nice segue to the next question that I wanted to ask you about, Russ. I've heard you talk about, in a nutshell, transparency. Being transparent, telling the truth, dropping truth bombs. I know that that's something that you talk about a lot. So I want to cover this topic in with regard to leadership and team building. So first of all, just to kind of check in, How important is transparency to you in kind of approaching your own leadership and your own business growth?
It's everything. I mean, it's critically important. It's definitely one of my top guiding principles is to be what I call radically transparent, because the more transparent you are with people, the more trust you're going to get. And so you might think to yourself, well, if I told somebody, I don't know, maybe that I've only had like two or three clients and they're the fourth client, it's like that they wouldn't want to work with me. Or if I tell people, hey, whatever, this is like, let's say I'm very upfront and honest with people, like, hey, you know, if we work together, we're going to teach you some cutting edge strategies, but you're going to have to work your ass off and you're going to have to persist through, you know, some setbacks, and things may not work right away, but we'll coach you and guide you through the process of dialing everything in. Mm-hmm. Like, people think, well, if I tell people about the downside, they're not going to want to do business with me. Mm-hmm. But what I've found is that the actual opposite is true. The more upfront you are with people about harsh reality, the more they trust you.
Yeah.
And I think marketing in general is kind of tending in that direction, where maybe 20 years ago or something, you would see a commercial for something like a Thighmaster or something, you know, where it's like, you know, in 5 minutes a day, you just do this thing and you can have incredible results. You know, now it's like you see commercials for things like Insanity, where it's like, you're going to work out until you throw up, and then you're going to throw up again. And after 8 weeks, you might be in pretty good shape. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, it's gone totally in the other direction.
Oh my God. Yeah, totally.
So
like,
I just think people,
sign me up. I might
totally
die.
People, cool. Like, yeah, exactly. People are signing up for it like crazy, because it's just so refreshing to hear the truth,
exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So I just think with the advent of social media and the fact that all of us are just being bombarded by advertising and slick advertising all day long, that if you've got a company that really is coming forward with the truth, that it's just like a breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. And especially if it's a coaching company where the whole coaching relationship is built on trust, I've got to be transparent with people, because if not, we're starting the whole relationship off on the wrong foot.
Yep, absolutely. So I'm going to assume that you apply this with your team as well, that it's about radical transparency. It's about telling the truth. It's about giving the negative feedback, telling them the hard stuff when they need to hear it.
Absolutely. I don't know who originated this quote. I heard it from Tim Ferriss, but I'm sure he probably wasn't the first person to say it. But he said that you can basically tell how successful someone's going to be by the number of difficult conversations that they're willing to have. And I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah, and I always talk about that too. It's about that series of conversations, but not just, you know, conversations about sunshines and unicorns. You know, it's about those hard conversations, those conversations that actually you kind of dread a little bit, but you know you have to have. That's what takes it to the next level.
But it can be done in a loving way, and so this kind of ties back to what we started talking about before, which is why coaching skills are so important. There's a huge difference between telling somebody, you did a terrible job and you're letting me down and, you know, you suck, and telling somebody, hey, you know what? I know how good you could be. I know how capable you are. And I see the potential in you. And right now you're not living up to it. So what do we need to do to get you where you need to be? And then coming at it from that direction is so much more powerful, because you can attack, you can kind of tear down the person's work while building up the person at the same time. And that, you know, is one of the ways, just like a micro way of being a really strong coach, can make a huge difference in getting a great performance out of your team.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So in terms of breaking it down, what are those difficult conversations? Certainly one type of difficult conversation would be that feedback conversation, where it's like, hey, look, you're not up to par. But I love the example that you just gave there, where it was like, it actually shouldn't be, you're not going to establish trust. It's like, hey, you screwed up, you need to do better. Right. Like that's no, you don't do that.
Right.
Like what you just said, it really comes from a more loving, compassionate place, where it's like, I want to help you get there. I know that you've been there before. So what do we need to do to make sure that you get back on track? So are there other ways that you you approach feedback, particularly the feedback that you know is going to be negative and may be taken harshly?
Well, we always listen first. Because many times, and this is kind of a weird thing that I found, is that, you know, people are, this is going to sound really obvious, but people are a human resource. So people are human beings, and human beings are going through life. And when you're going through life, that means sometimes you're going through some shit. And so when we see one of our top performers who suddenly begins to dip, or even one of our pretty good performers who suddenly is like in the tank, and it's like, what happened? I'd say 9 times out of 10, it's because there's something going on in their life that they're trying to process. And it's not laziness and it's not incompetence. It's because something is sapping their energy in their life.
Yeah.
And so by having that proper coaching relationship in place, instead of just coming out and getting on their case, we ask, what the heck's, you know, what's going on? Be honest. And we've created this space where they feel comfortable coming to us with that stuff. And then we can begin to give them, you know, help them have strategies to deal with it, mm-hmm. so that it doesn't affect their performance and we can get them back on track. And I mean, that's happened more times than I would count. Where if we didn't have that coaching skill, Jen, mm-hmm. where we could actually coach the person through what's going on in their life, you know, all we could really say is, hey, step up or you're out of here. And I bet more often than not, we would have had to fire those people if it was some other company where we didn't have that skill set. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But by coaching them through whatever was going on with them and getting their job performance back on track, now you have a ridiculous amount of loyalty, because these people go, oh man, these people don't just care about me for the numbers I'm producing. These people care about me. And that's obviously, you know, who has that?
Mm-hmm. And the theme that keeps coming up that I hear in everything that you're saying, Russ, and I absolutely agree with you, is that leaders need to be coaches. If you want to be a great leader, you need to up-level those coaching skills, because there's no way you're going to establish that trust and create that safe space to have that kind of, you know, have that kind of rapport with people if you're not coaching, if you're not really doing the best that you can to connect with people on a human level and talk about stuff outside of work. So coaching matters a lot. I love that message. Mm-hmm. And I like
absolutely.
Yeah, I like what you said too about talking about outside of work, because that's what I found too, that it's often, you know, especially when it's like the top performers, but it's like, hey, what's going on? And if it's a safe space to talk about that stuff, then they're not going to bring it up. They're not going to tell you that their kid is sick. They're not going to tell you, you know, that someone close to them, you know, in their family just passed away or whatever it might be. And you can't help them through that process. So creating that safe space is just so, so, so important. The question, though, and this is not easy, is how, you know, how do we do this? So are there some things that, and again, I get, as I'm about to ask it, it's going to be another one of those big questions. But are there things that you've found? How do you create that safe space?
Well, you have to mean it. I mean, and that sounds silly, but you really have to mean it. You know, people can tell when you're looking at them as a member of your team or a member of your family, or when you're just looking at them for numbers. You know, we had a client one time who was kind of reaching a point in their business where they were about to begin building a team, and they put together maybe their first little sales team, and the sales team wasn't really performing. And this person went to the team and said, hey, you know what? You guys aren't putting money in my pocket. And it's like, wait, you know, like, why should they care about putting money in your pocket? Mm-hmm. That's not why they're there. And so what you need to do is to create total alignment between whatever that individual's goals are and what your goals are for the company. Yeah. And so one of the things I always say is that an entrepreneur is someone who's creating a context where everyone wins. Mm-hmm. You win because you get to, you know, obviously make money and have this great company. The team wins because they get to make good money and be a part of something and move toward the goals for their life. And then obviously the client wins when you're doing a great job. Mm-hmm. And so that's my job, is to sort of create this context where everybody who's touched by the business, you know, is getting better and seeing their life improve. Mm-hmm. And it can't be a zero-sum game where like, oh, I won, but the client lost. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, I win, but my team members are miserable. It doesn't work that way. And that's building a house of cards. Mm-hmm. So you really have to, as the business owner, get your head right. And so it's not so much about having like some magical coaching skill, although having coaching skill is huge.
Yeah.
But I would say like 90% of the problem is that business owners don't really care that much about their people in the first place. They think they do, but they don't. And people can sense it. But when someone cares from a really genuine place, you can sense that too. And even if you maybe don't have the coaching skills or you really don't know how to do this, they're going to sense that you care. And so you can be fair but firm with that person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think I heard you say getting your head right, that's 90% of it. Is that what you said?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So can you tell me a little bit more about what you mean by that?
What I mean by that is you have to understand your role in the world. You have to understand, mm-hmm. like one of the biggest lessons that we teach is it's not about you. shockingly. You know, it's not about you. Yes, it is your company, but it is not about you. The number one focus, priority one, is your clients.
Yeah.
Is making sure that you're delivering and doing a kick-ass job for your clients. And then priority number two is the team and making sure the team is engaged and dialed in and all these other things. And then like priority nine is you and your happiness. And you'd be shocked how many people make terrible business decisions because they're not focused on those things. They're focused on like creating a business that's designed to, I don't know, be there to feed their ego, where like they don't, their number one interest isn't to make money. Their number one interest is to be a big shot. And so you can see it. They walk in the office. What do you guys, you know, like that, you know, like just, it's like if, when you watch these shows, like, I don't know if you guys ever watched the show, The Prophet, but that's a show on CNBC where the guy goes in and fixes these businesses that are falling apart. Yeah. Every single time it's because the business owner is a mess. Every single time. They could have a great product, they could have a great storefront, great brand, great everything, but the guy running the show or the girl running the show is a freaking train wreck.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, going into those conversations, you got to make sure that you're coming from a true place where you take that responsibility very, very seriously. Mm-hmm. That is your job. They're not there just to make you happy. You are the leader. You are there to help them win, and you're there to help your clients win. And guess what? You get to win too.
Yeah. Yeah. I do watch The Prophet. It's Marcus Lemonis, I think. And so he talks about the three P's, people, process, product. And yeah, mm-hmm. I definitely noticed the process and the product are important and he helps with that, but it's like, it's the people. It's that first
P. It's the people. But that's what's going on in the business of everyone listening to this too, is it's the people. The people are underperforming. Either you are, or your team is, or there's fear, or there's a victim mentality, or something. And that's why that coaching ability is so important, because you can identify what's going on and get to the bottom of it and then flip it around.
Yeah, yeah. And so when you said getting your head right, I totally hear what you were talking about there. But also it's like getting over your own fears and getting over your own victim mentality and actually admitting to yourself in the first place that like, hey, yeah, there is some fear. I'm freaking scared of this, and sort of acknowledging that and then moving on from it, that if you can't do that for yourself, there's no way that you're going to be able to have those hard conversations, those difficult conversations that are necessary mm-hmm. to build that trust.
And there is fear. There's always fear. And it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank account, because there's always something. And I speak from experience, right?
Yeah.
Like there's always something that you could let your mind run wild about. You know, there's always something that you could allow yourself to go into that place of fear. And so you're absolutely right. You got to learn to deal with your own fear first, because you're the one that provides certainty to the company. They're looking to you. So you look at it like this, right? I always think about what it must have been like to try to sail on one of those big sailing ships, right? Like, let's just say you're sailing from Europe and you're sailing to the New World, right? Like what that might have been.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you're the captain. Like, they're looking to you, you know, to keep them alive and to get them where they want to go. And so as the captain, you can't be looking at the horizon going, ooh, yeah, those clouds don't look good.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know, guys. You know, like, maybe this wasn't such a good idea. Yeah. Like, they're going to take you and kill you and throw you off the boat.
Yep.
So, like, you got to know what you're doing. You got to understand the incredible responsibility you have.
Yep.
And you have to have that certainty.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I do have one more question, Russ, and before we dive into that last question that I have for you. So basically two more questions. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about something that you mentioned a little bit earlier regarding incentivizing your team, incentivizing them, not just from a place of, from the monetary incentives, not just about the money, but also the fulfillment as well. But what I'm curious about, if you'd like to share, even if it just like at a high level, how you go about thinking about compensation and incentivizing your team and how you even decide what that would look like.
I tend to err on the side of overpaying because I believe that when you have really great people and really great talent, you should be overpaying. In fact, I hired a girl and one of our new administrators, and this was like a year ago, and she came on board and we had this initial conversation, and you know, we needed her, I think it was going to be not quite full time, but pretty close to full time, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, what would be good? How much do you want to, you know, how much do you want to be earning? And she said, I would be really happy making $3,200 a month. Mm-hmm. And that just seemed like such a ridiculously small number to me that I was like, look, we're going to pay you four. show up and do a really good job, don't
yeah.
be a part of it, and you know, don't make me regret it. And it's been great. And then yeah. as far as creating incentives, you just look at, okay, great. What, again, going back to being intentional, right? What is the outcome that this position is designed to create? How can I measure it? And then how can I strategically create bonuses so that people are rewarded when they do that thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really what it comes down to is, and it doesn't, you know, you want to have some kind of financial incentives and bonuses in place, but at the same time, it can just be about, you know, significance, making people feel really great, making people, again, feel like they're a part of something, like they're contributing to something mm-hmm. that makes the world a better place. Mm-hmm. And so it's just funny. It's just very funny to me when you're first building a business, your job is to kind of have the initial vision and to kind of get it working. And then maybe moving up to the next level, your job is to nail down your processes and stuff. But then once you're kind of at that highest level where you're really truly the CEO and you're the person running the company,
yeah.
it's so much more about managing your psychology and managing the psychology of the people around you that it's just,
yeah.
it's unbelievable. It's like a completely different job, even though it's the same job.
Yeah, yeah, that's an interesting way to think about it. I love that perspective. And also kudos to you for erring on the side of overpaying. If only all hiring managers and folks who make those kind of decisions were to think like that. Because, like, you know, I'm sure you know how it usually goes when folks are on the job market and looking for a job and, you know, the negotiation process, and it's like, okay, they're going to lowball and then you need to counter offer just to kind of find out where the edge of what they want to offer is. And then, of course, they're going to come back with something lower. And then you end up with something, you know, okay, hopefully, if you know how to negotiate well. But at the end of the day, wouldn't it just be easier? I mean, and there are companies that are doing this. So Netflix does it, and there's some other, you know, smaller tech companies that I know of as well that basically just look at the market. And they say, okay, what's at the 95th percentile of what somebody would earn for this particular job? And that's what we're going to pay. Mm-hmm. And even going to the point of saying, like, so I think, I'm trying to think of the company off the top of my head. It's like tip of the tongue, I can't think of it. It's Jason Fried's company, 37 Signals, I believe is what it is. So they mm-hmm. even go to the point of saying, okay, we're going to pay at like the 95th percentile in Silicon Valley. So what somebody in Silicon Valley, highest earning area in the country in tech, we're going to pay you that. So even if, because they're a completely remote company too. So it's
right.
like, okay, we could pay what somebody in, you know, Podunkville, South Dakota lives, but no,
right.
that's not fair. We're going to pay you that. And so wouldn't it just be easier? And then, because then it's like, you know, do this and don't make me regret it. You know?
Yeah. It's, and like, I mean, the thing yeah. is too, like, you know, it also fact you also have to, you know, keep in mind the profitability of the company. But we have a lot of yeah. Other businesses have challenges that we don't have. We don't have anything to stock, ship, manufacture. I don't have a big office. I don't, you know. So there's definitely room in the structure of the company for, you know, for me to pay more. But the other thing too, Jen, is like there's little touches that really mean a lot to people. So I know there's some companies that are all about cutting costs, but you know, my business is basically teaching. You know, we're in the business of helping other business owners be more successful. Okay. And so to me, that means that like when my senior leadership team has to fly someplace, like I'm not flying them coach, you know, I'm putting them yeah. in business class. Why? Because how can we be like, oh, we're going to help you have a successful business, but oh, by the way, we can't afford to fly business class, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just shows them how appreciated they are. Like when they first, I remember when I first hired one of my people, you know, she's going to fly out to California for one of our things. And she said, oh, this is terrible. You know, I'm going to have, you know, two stopovers. So it's like, to get to LAX, you have, you know, you got to, you're from New York, you got to get two stopovers. And she's like, well, yeah, I want to get the cheapest foot. And I was like, no. Like, look, just get a business class ticket. You know what I mean? Like, take business yeah. class. Like, cause it's going to be like 17 hours just on the road. I was like, no, I want you here in 4 hours so we can actually do some work.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, those big little things like that really make people feel valued, and what you get out of those people in terms of performance when they feel taken care of, it's like so much more than the cost of a ticket or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So last question that I have for you, Russ, it's a question that I ask all of my podcast guests. So what is the biggest people-related challenge in your job?
Managing my own psychology.
So it's your own. It's managing your own yourself.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Because for that exact same reason that we talked about, that if you don't have that certainty, that deep inner certainty, you can't make other people certain. So like fear is contagious, but certainty is contagious too. If they know that I believe and that nothing rattles my cage and that we've got this under control, they're all going to feel that way too. But if they see me freaking out and lashing out and making bad decisions and getting angry and getting super emotional, that's absolutely going to take a toll on their psychology too. And their performance is going to suffer for it. So I wouldn't necessarily say this is my biggest problem because I have this very, very well under control, but it's always my top priority. Like I always work on my mindset every single day because if I don't, everything just starts to slip.
And I have to say that that's one of the biggest benefits that I got out of the Clients on Demand program was sort of, and not just talking about this at a like a theoretical level, because I think we all know that it's important, but like getting down into how, what does this look like? What do you do? And what's going to work for me, and me figuring out, having the tools to figure out what's going to work for me on a day-to-day basis in terms of managing my own psychology, getting my mindset in that right place. And it's been, yeah, it's absolutely, it's like a lifelong journey. It's like, it's always changing because there's always new stuff that's kind of popping up. But I'm curious, Russ, just for, so for folks who are already sort of like mindset geeks and want to take it to the next level, but even particularly for folks who are like, what are they talking about? What do you mean mindset? So I'm curious if you, or even if it's just like, okay, I kind of get it, but what does that look like? So
Okay.
what does it look like for you? Do you have daily practices, daily rituals that you
Yeah,
do?
yeah, 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 yeah. So every day, and I do this in the shower, and I do it in the shower because it's the only time that I don't have a toddler attacking me or a cat attacking me or something attacking me. It's like, the only time in my life I get left alone is when I'm in the shower. So this is when I do it. And I consider this to be like a cheat code to life. Like, this is the thing that opens all doors for you. And it is to visualize and imagine the things that you want as if they've already happened. So in other words, you instead of saying, oh man, it'd be really great to, I don't know, move my company to this big beautiful office, you sit there and you imagine, how would I feel if we had this big beautiful office? You think about it and you think about where you want it to be and what it would look like. And you allow yourself to feel all of the joy and the gratitude that you would feel if it were real today. And so you literally be grateful for it in advance. And you feel that and you just kind of like let yourself just feast on how good it feels, and then you just kind of let it go. And then when you go about your day, and this is the part that people screw up, when you go about your day, you make all of your decisions as if that were your reality today. So I'll give you a quick example of what that means. A few years ago, probably like 3 or 4 years ago, I had a client who I was offering a service to, and this guy paid me, I think, $25,000 for this service. And I didn't have like a ton of money in the bank at the time. It was kind of just like this thing that this dude signed up for. I was really excited about it. I was really excited to deliver it for him. But like within 1 or 2 weeks of that relationship, I started to realize this guy was super toxic. And I started to realize he had tons of questions and just, was fighting me every step of the way and arguing with me and all this other stuff. And I was like, oh man, this guy's going to be a really difficult client. And so I sat there and I asked myself, well, if I look at the bank account, it is not a good idea for me to refund this guy. But then I asked myself, well, I just spent 20 minutes in the shower this morning visualizing that I had this $1 million a month business. And I said to myself, okay, well, if I was running $1 million a month business, what would I do? And it's like obvious. I would refund this guy and not even worry about it. So that's exactly what I did. And that is how I make decisions in this company, where it's like, if I were already the person I want to be, if I were already running the kind of company that I want to run, what would I do? And because when you make decisions that way, you're showing your subconscious that all of your fears are basically BS. You can't do visualizing for 15 minutes every day and then the other 23 hours and 45 minutes of your life contradict everything you visualize. It just doesn't work. And so that's where people get lost, because anybody can sit down and like visualize and imagine what they want. That's the fun part. The hard part is going out there and living your life in a way that's faithful to that. And so that's what I do. And I do that every single day, and it's never steered me wrong. And my company's doubled every year for the last, I think, 5 years.
It's so awesome. It is so great. It's been so inspiring to watch that happen. And it's it, and the stuff that you're talking about, you know, I had to admit the first time that I heard you talking about it, being grateful in advance. What I don't understand. Like I can be grateful. Like I can say thank you.
Right.
It's like, why would I be grateful in advance? It didn't happen yet. How do I know if it's going to happen? And I was living there, and it was like, and now I look back at it and I'm like, okay, well, that's the fear talking. That's the, you know, exactly. The analysis paralysis playing in, because I know that that's where I tend to go. It's like, well, no, like if that doesn't make any sense, you know,
and, I'm going to worry about it. You've been crushing it lately. I mean, it's like, you know, it's just, I don't know why it works. Right. I mean, you know, if you're someone who's religious, you can say that, like, look, hey, you know, you're, you know, showing faith and you're being faithful in God, and God's going to bring about this thing. You know, if you're not, you could just be like, look, you're kind of playing a trick on your subconscious, where you're saying, like, you know, your subconscious is vividly visualizing this reality. And then you're sort of creating this cognitive dissonance where you open your eyes and you go back to your life and like, wait, I don't have this yet. And then your subconscious kicks into gear going, oh, I got to resolve this by bringing those things into your life.
Yeah.
But however you want to conceptualize it, it freaking works.
It totally does.
I mean, it's crazy.
it is kind of crazy, you know, and I'm saying that all the time to like my clients or people who like see my success or talk about other people's successes. I'm like, look, I have a degree in psychology and I can't explain this to you exactly. Yes, there's absolutely stuff that happens at a psychological and a neuropsychological level here, you know, in terms of mindfulness, right? We can go there. Mm-hmm. But there's also like, there's this level that you're not going to take those risky actions, you know, those boundary stretching actions that are going to get you where to go if you're not living there already. And so it's just kind of, it just happens. And so,
that's a great point though, Jen, is because that kind of boldness is necessary for greatness. Where you look at like anyone in history who did extraordinary things, they were probably scared out of their minds. Mm. You know, I mean, I don't even like Washington sailing across the freezing river in the dead of night to go ambush these guys. I think it was like on Christmas Eve or something. Like that was a hell, I mean, that's crazy. Like, you know, like, but it worked, you know, and all of these great moves that people have made throughout history, it's because they knew that they would be successful, even if no one else did. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that, then you're not going to be able to take the kind of bold action that you need to take. And I think that's why most people fail. So that's actually a really great point.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, and that really is what it's all about, that you can't just hope and pray and dream it. You actually have to make it happen too. So,
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, cool. Well, it's right about time to wrap up, Russ. It's been awesome chatting with you. And so I wish you all the best with Clients on Demand. I am totally following along with you, being inspired by all of your successes. And it's been awesome. Thanks so much for
awesome,
chatting
Jen.
Today. Awesome. Cool.
My pleasure.
All right.